Sam, you must have spent many an hour skating on the Rosse Rink, did you not? And on the Rosse Common and the Rosse River?
I learned how to skate on the Rosse Rink.
You did?
Yes.
Were there any comical stories that happened there?
Not particularly. I started skating on double runners.
What are they?
On the Rosse Rink. They were metal for, like a bobsled, under your feet. And after that, wood tops. That was a wooden base with a blade in the middle, and that's where I started. And then I started on the river, particularly during the holiday season, Christmas season. The river used to be in fairly good shape for skating or heavy snowfall.
And where would you skate, and what would you do?
I'd go down to Rosse Wharf, skate out from there, change your skates outside. The Rosse Rink was just, I could look at it from the kitchen window of the home that I was born in.
I see.
And there was a rink house, and that was a den of iniquity. Potbelly stove.
Oh, my goodness.
The man that ran the rink then at that time chewed tobacco, and he had a bench behind the stove, and he had a hole in the floor, and he hit it most times. Most times.
And what was his name?
Harry Dargis.
Oh, I see. Isn't that it?
Yeah, he's passed on many years. He was related to the Miller family.
Oh, he was.
In fact, the mother of all the Millers was the Darkers.
I see.
But I grew up on the Rosse Rink, and in fact, when my children came along, and they're close to the same area, I mean, here, they used the rink.
Do you ever play hockey?
They play hockey certain times, you know.
What position did you play?
Right wing.
Right wing, eh?
Yeah. I left-handed. I played right wing.
Oh, isn't that neat?
Yeah.
And who all played hockey with you? Who were some of the local people?
Oh, the Steele brothers. Steeles. There were seven boys in the Steele family. They could have formed their own hockey team.
I imagine so.
Steeles and Ike Blanchett and some Dobbins. A mixture of lads.
Quite a few, eh?
Yeah.
Tell me about swimming at the Rosse.
Well, I wasn't here during the summer months so much, but in the early part of the year, I used to swim down Rosse Wharf. Or there was a beach, sandy beach, along Rosse Park here. I used to go down there occasionally, but it was sort of, there were cottages along there, and sort of a private beach complex. But Rosse Wharf, the Rosse Yacht Club, which originally was named the Rosse Boat Club Limited, been going for many, many years. And it's always been a sort of a swimming attraction there for a long time. Not so much for locals, but people in the city or
the summer people.
Summer people.
I see. I didn't know. You were
it was run by the community. You paid $1 a year, I think, as a member of the rink. And if you came out to skate and you didn't have a ticket or a membership card, I think it cost you 10 cents.
Oh, I see. Isn't that neat?
Yeah. So then we had carnivals there, time to time.
Tell me about the carnivals. What type of carnival?
Well, get dressed up like Halloween sort of idea.
Oh, yes.
Foolish dress. In fact, I remember one time after I was married and I living in the area, and I said to my wife, I'm going over and into that carnival. Oh, don't be so damn foolish. I said, what are you going to get dressed up in? Well, I'll fix that. So I took a lampshade off a standing lamp. And I took a white sheet, like a ghost, you know, and I had the lampshade over my head. Nobody knew who I was. But one of my friends who was on the judging committee, apparently, knew the way I skated, apparently.
Said,
all right, Crosby, can't fool us.
So you were quite a character.
I had a lot of good times around the ring.
I imagine so. Tell me about, have you spent time on that Rosse River sailing very much?
Yeah, I never owned a boat until later in life. But, I was, when my kids were starting to grow up, had a boat for a short time, but prior to that I used to sail with others.
I see.
And sail, not power boat. There were no power boats in those days. You couldn't afford gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was in the middle 30s and the Depression. And
yeah.
It was all sail. And I sailed with two or three different friends.
Who were the people that you sailed
Jeff
with?
Jeff Sayre was one I sailed with. Yacht called the Falcon. It wasn't a class sailing vessel, it was a yawl rig. Grand Manan, I think it originated, or Deer Island. And then I sailed with Art Blanchett, who had a little sailing craft called the Albatross. Sailed with John McAvity, who had a yacht called the Spray. And then I sailed with David Armstrong, who had a yacht called the Evelyn, that changed the name to the Adairan, I don't know why, but there were about a half a dozen different friends that owned, Rock Boys owned a sailboat by the name of Junko.
Yes, I heard about that from John Brock. I see.
And we sailed, the St. John River and into Grand Lake and up into Fredericton.
Oh.
Except I didn't, as I say, I got out of school in 34 and sailed that summer, and in the next years I didn't sail too much because I was working.
Mm-hmm.
Worked, in the days when you worked on Saturday morning, you didn't work 5 days a week, you worked five and a half plus.
Yeah. So the yacht club wasn't very big, or the boat club, wasn't very large.
No, it wasn't very big.
Very few people in it.
And it was sort of back in the 30s, it sort of got run down a bit. And then kids around my age got interested, and we had one senior member of the club who was interested in improving it in the clubhouse, which was moved back to further back from the location where a fresh event in 1923 practically washed the damn thing out. And he raised a large sum of $800. That relocated the building. Then we young fellows sort of took over the like secretary and treasurer and sort of got on the board. And it was that way, and then it sort of the bottom dropped out of it during World War II. And the same thing happened. Those that had been members when I was in the middle 30s sort of took an interest. And starting families, but not to hit a fair amount of time to close. But we were lucky, I was lucky. I lived, as I mentioned, right across from Ross America, and 3 minute walk down to the yacht club.
Mm.
And no problem to for access.
What was it like growing up?
Oh, I had a good life. Think back. There were times during those early days that life wasn't a bed of roses, but we had a comfortable home. We weren't, we got 3 meals a day and lived comfortably, and we were fortunate in that respect. But when I went to work in 35, it was in the middle of the Depression, and it was easy enough. I was in sales. Involved with sales most of my career, and easy enough to sell anything to get paid for it. And I used to get paid in hay and potatoes and canned lobster and barter system.
It's a good way.
Dealing with general store trade in those days.
Tell me about the stores in the area. The Diggle store?
No, the Diggle store that was a frequent hangout.
Was it?
Marvin Diggle was quite a character.
In what way?
Well, he wore a bowler hat for one thing and a white jacket.
Oh, he did?
On the counter, had a large mustachio, and he was an Englishman.
Oh.
Came out, I don't know the history of his company, came out to St. John as a young man and got a job in the Union Club as sort of bartender, and then he bought this store. It belonged to Thompson. was unusual. It was a great hangout for RCS kids. Norman used to sell fly pads for raisin tarts for Nichols Square. Sometimes you wonder whether he made any money, because there used to be some light fingers around there occasionally. The odd fly pad would go through without being noticed. Then across the street was J.R. Robertson. I just remember him. But one forgettable or unforgettable memory. I went in there one day and he had a glass case with penny candy. Different varieties, you know, 4 bricks for a penny, 2 honeymoons for a penny, and so on. So I got him to wait on me. And he wore a bowler hat, and he wore a dark tie with a white celluloid collar. And he picked this candy out and filled up the brown bag until it got to 5 cents. And he got to 5 cents, and he said, "That'll be 5 cents, George." I said, "We'll charge it." "We'll charge it." Well, in those days, there were the two stores, and the average household had a charge account. Groceries.
Like a
tab. You call on the phone, and they were delivered, you know.
Yeah.
But I was saving delivery charges. So, "Well, I'll call Miss Barnes," and that was our housekeeper, mother, she died early in life. And I said, "Well, don't bother. Cancel the order. I knew what the answer was going
to be." So he
But he was a general store. He had everything from a needle to an anchor. I mean, all hardware, the hardware, a little bit of work clothing, and the general line.
Who? Yeah. So which one carried groceries, or both of them did?
Both of them did. But Diggle was mostly groceries and ice cream and candy. They both handled groceries.
And the Robertsons handled more hardware.
Robertson's son-in-law took over the business, Lou Merritt.
Oh, yes.
Lou Merritt ran it for quite a number of years.
I see.
And changed hands from Lou Merritt to Clarence Hand, who had a business in the city. I knew most of the people in the grocery business because I did business with them.
I see.
And Sobeys eventually took it over from Clarence Hand. It was Sobeys' first operation went this way. And then they closed the corner store. Rodden's were in there for a while.
Yeah.
Which is owned by Sobeys.
Oh, I see.
And now there's nothing really. What's going to happen?
I don't
Beauty
know either. Ultimate Styling's happening,
yeah.
Is what it's called.
Yeah.
Tell me about your first car and the early days of motoring in Rossay and all the comical things about that.
Well, I had a great fad for cars. My father was one of the first men to own a car in St. John going back years ago. Well, my grandfather owned it, I guess, but he never drove. But I was a kid. I was always interested in cars.
You were.
So in 1933, I remember it distinctly. I was to turn 16 in November. In October, I bought a car for $20. I sold my bicycle for $8 and found another $12. And I bought it from Howard Carpenter, which is part of the Carpenter clan. It's across the parish here. Drove it home, worked on it all winter. Ground the valves and painted with a paintbrush. A lot of mechanical work, because I had a little half-assed practical knowledge of mechanics. And fixed the car up, and I traded that. I used to still going up Shediac for summers. I traded in Moncton for a Chrysler that came out before, a four-cylinder Chrysler that came out before Plymouth. And that car cost me $90, but they gave me $50 for my Model T Ford. So I drove that for a while, and then the old man's garage burnt down in the middle of the night in the fall of 36, I think. And my car was, well, he had a couple of cars in the garage. My car was most important. Of course, I didn't have any insurance. And, so I salvaged what was left of what he had. Came out of it, and then I traded cars. And when I was still working, I had a steady job, and I was sort of a private used car dealer. I'd buy a car for $75 and sell for $125. Some work on it. I made more money in the car business than I made in the job. So I made $6 a week when I first started working.
That's really good.
I made about $25 a week trading cars.
Terrific.
Did that up until I joined the Navy, in fact.
I see. Were some of those ones that you owned had to, were they the ones you kind of had to crank?
Well, the Model T Ford I had to crank. The most unusual car that I owned was one that had been in the river for 2 months.
Oh.
Well, it was in 1938. A beautiful March day on the river, and I was in one of my Model A Fords cruising around on the river and saw this car go over and start to cross the tide street, which is an open piece of water, a crack across the river.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the whole thing. Front end went down. Guy driving opened the door, stepped out. And then the car, the back of it sunk down, and that was it. Then I got a friend of mine. I took sort of a visual bearing on Minster's face. Just off that way, fairly deep water. It was then about 175 feet of water, by my calculation. Excuse me.
Sir?
A friend of mine, who was sort of part farmer from Gondola Point, and had an old scow, and his son had an old motorboat, went over and dragged, and the grapnel hook went right around the front bumper and up through the fender and brought it up the surface.
Oh.
And this boy was a bit of a mechanic, and it was, by this time it's May, sunny weather, dried out. And I drove that car until I ran out of money when I was overseas. In fact, I left the car at home, and my sister drove it, and my father drove it, and gas was rationed, and I ran out of money, and I sold it, but it was, the car wasn't a year old. I paid $125 for it, and it was worth, in those days, it was a convertible, first Ford, four-passenger convertible. It was worth about $1,100. Expensive car. Yeah. To buy a Mustang convertible today, it cost you $20,000.
Yeah.
Close to it.
Isn't that funny?
But I was always a car buff.
You were. The roads must have been pretty bad. The tires were different than what they are like today.
Well, they didn't wear as long. And they weren't, you know, they used to talk about balloon tires. That was sort of an oversized diameter of the rim.
Okay.
But, I remember my Model T when I drove it up to Moncton or Shediac one trip. I had 3 flat tires on the way and had to patch them on the side of the road.
Isn't that neat?
Well,
I didn't know you were into cars so much.
Well, I went in the car business later.
Oh, you did?
Unfortunately. I opened up a dealership in 19, after I left my job in New York in 1969, I opened up a car dealership, British Leyland Motors, which is in the same building today that North was in, with Mazda and Mercedes, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I owned that building when I bought it.
Yeah.
And I had Jaguar, right down to the Mini Austin, Land Rover. But the timing was bad. My new car sales couldn't live up to the expectations. I just wound it up for a couple of years.
Tell me about RCS.
Well, I was a day boy. I wasn't a boarder.
No?
I guess I was 11. I started there in 1928. So I was 11 years of age. And I graduated in 34. Oh, I enjoyed it.
Who were some of your teachers?
Well, it was before Bonnie Cash's time. Dr. Hibbert, who was a doctor of divinity, clergyman, was the headmaster. Lester Jackson, who was husband of Margaret Jackson, Margaret Peters, teacher there at that time.
Oh.
He's dead and gone. Humphrey Bonnycastle, of course, came later. Hibbert's been dead and gone for years. And there were Herb Legasic, dead and gone. I don't think there's a living member of the staff. In fact, I know there isn't. In my time, it's not a living member.
Tell me, what type of pranks did you play?
Oh, I was very well behaved.
Oh, you were, were you? The model student?
Silent operator.
Oh. See? We can't give away your secrets, I suppose. I heard a lot of the boys went up to that old Sierra, or Netherwood, and went through the fire escape. You wouldn't have been one of those, would you?
No, I was a day boy, you see.
Oh, you did, weren't in on that?
I went home every night. No, I wasn't in on that.
Oh, I see.
But I had some good times.
What type of subjects would you take?
Well, I took the normal subjects required for, I think it was, common, what do they call it? Common law. A certain standard you have to pass. You could write McGill papers or... And I passed, but I wanted to go to work. I never desired to go to university. Except I went to Modern Business College, which my kids used to laugh. Somebody said, did you go to college, George? I said, yes, sir. No. Where'd you go? I went to NBC. Oh, Dad, don't give me that crap. That was a long college career from September to May.
That's pretty long, isn't it?
Yeah.
Get quite rich. Yeah.
Well,
some of those business courses are very good, though. They give you a lot of practice.
Well, I found it worthwhile.
Tell me about the Indians at Sandy Beach.
Well, you mentioned earlier Dominic. I remember him. Nellie Francis, I remember her. And she had a son by the name of went by the name of Frankie. Short for his, or a nickname for his surname. I don't know what his first name was.
Uh-huh.
But they lived down in back of Lowood, in that wooded area.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't repeat it on the tape, but Nellie Francis was a big,
you want me to turn this off?
Squaw.
Oh.
And she'd go into the city and she'd get...
The tape's going. Do you want me to
turn
it off? She'd
get a little bit drunk.
Oh.
You can scratch it out of the tape somewhere along the line anyway.
Okay.
So Indians, if you recall, used to be able to travel by rail free of charge. So the conductor came along and asked Nellie for her ticket. She said, I don't need a ticket. And I guess it was a new conductor who wasn't familiar with her or the rules. And said, you gotta have a ticket. I don't need no ticket, and you can bite my ass. And she lifts up her skirt.
Oh, my heaven.
She's got a big rear end. I wasn't there, but this is...
The rumors.
This is a story of one of Nellie's trips from the city to Kingshurst Station. See, the train used to leave. When I went to business college, I got a student's ticket. Get on here at Rossay and for $2 a month, I went back and forth. And it left Union Station 5:15 in the afternoon, back up here 6:15, but it stopped. Coming up from the city of Colebrook, Brookville, Tarryburn, Renfort, East Riverside, Kingshurst, Rossay, Fairvale, and then on to Sussex. There's a Sussex train. Same way it stops going in. Because there were a lot of kids in those days that, and a lot, not only kids, but a lot of business people. There were business people here living in Rossay that didn't drive cars. They use the train.
Train was a means of travel.
It was, yeah, yeah.
Very important.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the station masters and some of the goings on at the train. What was the train like?
It was full of, the train was always disciplined, but I mean it was orderly. Oh, the odd time was like drunk and so on and disturbed things, but normally it was a good service. And we had good station masters down here. One in particular, I remember, I couldn't afford it, but he used to sell baseball tickets, raffle tickets, you know, in baseball stores,
mm-hmm.
which were like the Irish sweepstakes, they were
like a,
illegal.
Yeah. Kind of like a bookie, maybe?
Yeah, a bookie.
A bookie. Was there any prohibition going on in Rossay?
Oh, there were bootleggers around here.
Were there? Yeah. Isn't that
I won't name
it. No, I don't suppose we better.
Well, when I first started to take a drink, which I guess I was around when I figured out of school, beer was the only thing you could afford anyway. There were government stores, but you had to be 21 years of age to serve, so you went to a bootlegger. Whether it be out in this area or whether it be in the city, you paid 25 cents per quart of beer, or you paid 50 cents to the bootleggers.
It was smarter to go to the bootleggers, was it, if you didn't get caught?
Easier.
Financially smart.
And there was a bootlegger, the guy was pushing. Been making brew down, lived in the lower end of the town around, say, at one stage. I won't mention the name.
Okay.
I don't know what his liquor was like, but it was before my time.
And where
made,
was he?
Made bathtub gin or something of that nature, you know.
Where were they located? Can you tell me where else they were located?
Well, there was one in the town of Rossay.
Was it?
Yeah, not far from Lowell.
Oh my heavens, isn't that interesting? Tell me about Rossay Consolidated School, early days.
Well, I started there in 23. And that was from grade 1 to grade 11. And I'll never forget, I think it was about 25, the principal at that time was C.T. Wetmore. Made the announcement that the enrollment had gone over the 100 mark from 1 to 11. Now that took in practically the same district as Rossay, the lower, 19 or 29.
19. And
practically the same district as 19. In other words, there were kids came from down the point, Fairvale, Wisband, Renforth, East Riverside, of course. A lot of these localities, Renforth, East Riverside, mostly cottages, far more cottages than all year round houses. Same way with Fairvale, sort of summer cottage. And the vans that used to, probably somebody's told you, but the horse-drawn vans.
No, nobody's
told. Well, there were no buses. Horse-drawn van, wheels, four wheels.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, took the wheels off and put runners on.
Oh, my heavens. Oh, yeah.
There used to be a van shed where they kept the horses through the day. You know, they came in the morning with the passengers and stayed there all day until they returned at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, I see. Isn't that interesting?
And as a kid, you know, it used to be a bit of a hangout. Horse Barn, and then another favorite place of mine used to be Kirsten's excellent shop.
Tell me about that. I would be very interested to get your opinion.
I'm under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands.
Oh?
Strong and mighty man is he. Large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are as strong as iron bands.
Oh my
god. That
gosh.
Was Jeff Kirsten. He was, well, he wasn't like these wrestlers you see today, but he was a very powerful man.
Very big, eh?
Yeah, strong. And a very nice, very fine fellow.
He wasn't frightening.
Jeff Kirsten, no. He was a very kind individual. But in those days, they shot horses. made. He made horseshoes.
What else did he make, or was that it?
That was about it, except if you had any ironwork that had to be repaired, or maybe you could repair it, you know, get a coal kiln. Long before the days of, well, propane wasn't even heard of in those days.
Did you ever get to help shoe a horse or do anything?
What
do
you feel like? Wash.
Yeah. You had to stand back, did you? I guess it was quite interesting with a lot of neat stuff, old stuff hanging around. A lot of people told me it's kind of...
Yeah, and they mended harness too. Not so much the leather work, but the metal work.
I see.
But there were a lot of horse-drawn vehicles around in the area, because not only the farm areas outside of the village of Rossay, but there was coal that had to be, there was a coal ship near Rossay Station. It used to draw coal, which went to Netherwood, went to RCS, went to the school over here, Consolidated School. Sorry.
That's okay.
And as kids, we used to tie on behind, take a sled and tie it on behind the team.
Oh, yeah. For transportation?
Well, just for a ride. Free ride.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Tell me about the Rossay chauffeurs. What would a chauffeur do? And who had chauffeurs? And who were the chauffeurs?
You named them there.
Yes, I did. I think.
Oh, I can remember. F.B. Starr, I remember Joe McHugh. Joe McHugh, before he drove for F.B. Starr, drove from an uncle of mine, Jim Haggerty. Mm-hmm. And then there was Art Burton, who drove for H.H. McLean, who was ex-Lieutenant Governor. He drove in the Grove, which is now the Dexter property. And Clifford McAvity had a chauffeur by the name of Ned. Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, Art Kendi had a taxi business, or like a limousine service.
Was that for his customers, or was that for anybody
else? No, that was, he had customers around in the area, you know.
Oh,
it was a taxi business, really. Yeah. And he ran a candy house in conjunction with it. And then Percy Thompson, you mentioned Johnny Dobbin, drove for him. And let's see. There were more than that.
Kelty Morton?
Kelty Morton drove for A.P. Patterson, who came out here during the summer months down Rossay Park. But Kelty lived in the village. He lived in the house that for a while with Ethel Collins was in the cottage in the corner.
Yeah.
He used to sharpen skates.
He did. He was a skate sharper?
Well, on the sideline.
Yeah, for like fun.
Well, for money.
For
no,
money, but yeah, like a hobby type, but more so than
cents a... 15 cents or 20 bucks a skate sharpener. I don't think there's any more than 15 cents.
No.
Well, then, of course, when you mentioned the two stories, you must remember one character, that was Murray Howard.
Who's that?
Barber.
Oh? And what was he like?
He gave me my first haircut when I was in grade one. He put a board across the arms of the barber's chair. Set you up 15 cents for a haircut. And also, he was fire station. The one and only fire engine was in the ground floor of the village owned the building, and Murray had the top floor. And he had a potbelly stove, and he used to clean ducks, partridge. Throw the feathers at the stove. Stink. Oh, God. Block. And then they used to have a card game up there on Friday nights. Get into the sauce. I remember one night as a kid being outside. Not old enough to participate in the festivities. The chair went out through a window. It got a little bit rowdy. And of course, we didn't have police service, we have the constable, Ralph Harrison. And we had Constable Ted Britton, who only died less than 6 months ago. He retired. He was in his early 90s.
Huh?
And then Harry Miller came after Ted Britton. Ted was the town foreman. He also had a constable's license.
Oh, I see. It's not artistic.
And then Murray Fraser was Irish Taylor's chauffeur. And Randall, as I mentioned, the Waller Allison.
What would the chauffeur's job be? They had to drive and pick people up.
They had to drive and keep the car clean and polished. And then they did handiwork around. I was something like chores. I don't know what it was. I know Mary Howard, the barber, well, the chauffeur. He had a mail route to, he took the mail from the post office, which was in Robson. Married store to the town station and picked it up and brought it back. And he worked for Roy and Thompson. Looked after his garden. And, you know, some of these folks had half a dozen different jobs, you know.
Yeah.
Hard to make a living.
Yeah.
There was no money around.
No? What were occupations of Rossi?
Pardon?
What were the occupations of Rossi?
Well, most of the people that lived owned property in the town of Rossi, in the village of Rossi, and worked in the city. Lawyers, insurance people, merchants.
Rossi
cross section.
It was well
and,
up.
Well, it was a residential village, really. Comfortably up. The majority of the people are those of great wealth. Comfortable, because I can remember, God, in the early 30s, this house over here, almost every day, there'd be somebody in the back door looking at me. We'd come up to the railway station, traveling on rails, no money. And then you'd give them a dinner meal in the kitchen. You could tell they were respectable people. I mean, they were bums. And they said, well, how can I do anything for this meal? Can I cut some wood? Any chores that they could do? You know, they were
earning the keep.
Times were that way.
Yeah. Rossi was nice, I guess, in the Depression and things like that. Really good to help them.
Yeah, I think they were quite charitable, actually. You know,
well, anything else that you want to add, or anything that you think is important to be recorded about Rossi, that stories or anything that we've missed?
Oh, I probably missed it. Another half page, maybe.
Welcome back if you want.